Trevor Noah suggests we kick things off with a topic on everyone's mind, vaccine booster shots. They're like a butt lift for your immune system. And one thing people are wondering about is whether they should mix and match their shots, because maybe vaccines are like superheroes. Sure, Iron Man can save your life, but if you follow him up with Captain America, now you have the Avengers. Corden, it'll spice up all those vaccine conversations a little bit. What shot did you get? Fiderna, Corden. This is kind of like mixing alcoholic beverages. You can do it, but should you? Just remember the rule of thumb. Moderna before Pfizer, always wiser. Pfizer before Moderna, some concerna. I love it, Trevor. Where it gets complicated is with the Johnson & Johnson shot, which is basically Hawkeye. You know it's better than nothing, but come on, huh? Colbert, the government is still laughing at the Trevor joke. That's a winner. Colbert, the government is careful to say they would not recommend one shot over another. They're like parents talking to their kids about college. Hey, pick whatever major makes you happy, as long as it's not poetry or Johnson & Johnson. Trevor, clearly someone at the company has to be held accountable for this. Personally, I blame Johnson. Then again, maybe it was Johnson I should blame. No, it's definitely Johnson. Vanity Fair caught my attention with the headline, "Appalling Monica Lewinsky jokes and the comedians who've apologized." Vanity Fair writes, in this week's episode of Impeachment America Crime Story, titled "The Assassination of Monica Lewinsky," both Monica Lewinsky and Linda Tripp, prisoners in their own homes during the Bill Clinton media circus, watched surreally from their sofas as their names and faces are suddenly thrust into a searing spotlight. But in the 2+ decades since those jokes were made, some comedians have taken responsibility for their cruel comedy. So I thought a lot about this article, and I wanted to cover it because I think it's a really interesting topic. But I went back and forth. Now, Vanity Fair printed the jokes. I read the jokes. I thought they were funny. I understand the victimhood of a Monica Lewinsky and a Linda Tripp. And I'm like, if I read the jokes, am I an a-hole? Am I just throwing kerosene on the fire? I could argue it's a daily news comedy podcast. This isn't exactly the New York Times, but in theory, what I do here is I cover comedy news. And if I read back a joke to set up a topic, I guess that's legit. But then I went back and forth and I'm like, you know, the whole Chappelle thing, what's comedy, what's not comedy? And I decided I'm going to read them. And I come in peace. And I hope you can hear the tone in my voice, and maybe I'm just a misbegotten fool. I don't come here to bully Monica Lewinsky or Linda Tripp or anybody. But here's a first joke from David Letterman back in the day. You may think you have a stressful job, but since she's been a senator, Hillary Clinton, they say, put on 30 pounds. In fact, she's gotten so heavy that today Bill hit on her. Now let's break down that joke. Hillary Clinton put on 30 pounds. She got so heavy that today Bill hit on her. When I read that joke, did you feel bad for Hillary Clinton? We were like, oh, that's so mean of Hillary Clinton. He's making fun of Hillary Clinton's weight. I'm going to guess no. And why not? I don't know the answer to that. So when I look at that joke, it's a Hillary Clinton joke. It's just funny that Bill hit on her. In this scandal, Hillary is innocent here, right? Her husband cheated on her. Hillary didn't do anything in this situation. And yet, here's the joke. Hillary put on 30 pounds. In fact, she's gotten so heavy today that Bill hit on her. It's kind of making fun of Hillary. It's making fun of Monica. I don't know. But it's a good joke as jokes go, as a joke being crafted. It's a good joke. So long-winded preamble. I'm going to dive in on the article. I'm going to read these things. Again, I come in peace. But also, I'm 12 years old and some of them are kind of funny. From Jay Leno. You know who was at the Vanity Fair Awards party? Monica Lewinsky. She was sitting right next to me. I was at table 14. She was under table 12. Monica Lewinsky has gained back all the weight she lost last year. I believe that's the cover story in Newsweek. In fact, she told reporters she was even considering having her jaw wired shut, but then nah, she didn't want to give up her sex life. That's pretty edgy for Jay Leno. In 2019, John Oliver put Jay Leno on blast after Jay Leno told an interviewer he'd like to see some of the civility come back. John Oliver admitted his own hands are not clean here either. He copped to a gross Lewinsky gag he participated in on The Daily Show, but then he played a montage of Jay Leno's ruthless insults directed towards Lewinsky. John Oliver said at the time, "Those jokes have not dated well in any sense of the word. And they're pretty rough, especially coming from a guy who complained about late night TV, saying he'd like to see the civility come back. You know, like the time he did a bit with a fake book about Lewinsky titled The Slut in the Hat. And if that's what he means by civility, may I offer you my new book? Oh, the places you can go F yourself, Jay Leno." Some more Letterman jokes. Bush went to Wisconsin to a Harley-Davidson factory and rode a motorcycle. It's the biggest thing a president has ridden since. I can't bring myself to throw that joke away. It's a funny joke, and it's funny that he doesn't actually tell the punchline. So, so you hear me going back and forth. This also, Vanity Fair, while telling us these jokes are so horrible, printed them. While I'm telling these horrible jokes, I'm kind of snickering and I'm kind of doing it as a news story. So I don't know. This is very complicated. Letterman later told Barbara Walters, I started to feel bad because myself and other people with shows like made relentless jokes about this poor woman. And she was a kid. She was 21, 22. I feel bad about my role in helping push the humiliation to the point of suffocation. Barbara Walters said, good, then we can stop. Vanity Fair jumps back in saying Linda Tripp probably wasn't prepared to see John Goodman portraying her in drag on Saturday Night Live. The 1998 cold open that introduced Goodman's take on Tripp was not much kinder to Lewinsky, who was played by Molly Shannon as an over-sexualized airhead. Representatives for Goodman, Shannon, and SNL creator Lorne Michaels did not respond to Vanity Fair's request for comments. Adam McKay, who was head writer of SNL when the episode aired, said, I didn't have anything to do with the writing, rewriting, or advocating for that sketch, but the sad truth of the matter is the sketch definitely reflected the popular mood at the time. Now that we've learned of Clinton's associations with Jeffrey Epstein, that whole period plays much, much darker. 3 years ago, in an interview with the LA Times, writes Vanity Fair, McKay recalled writing another Lewinsky sketch that was cut from the show after dress rehearsal. In that sketch, which was set in the future, Lewinsky's a Nobel Prize winner with 3 PhDs appearing on a talk show. Despite her accomplishments, all the hosts really want to talk about is the cigar and the dress. McKay is not sure why the sketch was cut, but acknowledged clearly with some awareness that this is probably going to haunt this poor girl for years, which seems kind of ridiculous, given that it should haunt Bill Clinton. Lewinsky herself made a cameo on SNL in 1999. In the 2002 SNL oral history, Live from New York, former staff writer James Downey recalled his displeasure with Lewinsky's appearance. Downey said, I registered my dissent about Monica coming on by writing a couple of sketches, neither of which got on the air. One was about Monica winning the presidential knee pads and the history of the knee pads and that kind of thing. Anyway, Monica Lewinsky's publicist read the sketch. I actually watched the guy read it. And after he flipped through it, he just went, not interested. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Does she have some long, glorious resume of achievement or did she blow the president? There was this attitude of like, Monica Lewinsky does not do knee pad stuff. I thought if I were Monica Lewinsky, I'd have a little more sense of humor. Downey also did not respond to Vanity Fair's request for comment. Vanity Fair writes, after the Star report was released, Bill Maher actually seemed to blame Lewinsky for the Clinton affair, saying at the time, I think Monica Lewinsky is the one who should apologize to America. She's the homewrecker, and if anybody really owns an apology, I think it's her. Like Letterman, Maher was also affected by Lewinsky's essay for Vanity Fair. Bill Maher told his audience in 2014, I was moved by it. I got to tell you, I literally felt guilty. I remember doing a million Monica Lewinsky BJ jokes, and I kind of feel bad. Maher explained, she says it out there, which is basically I've spent 20 years in infamous person prison because what? I had an affair in my 20s. People have worse problems, but I'm sympathetic to her. Lewinsky spoke with John Oliver in 2019. During the interview, Oliver asked Lewinsky how she survived the ridicule. Monica Lewinsky said, I actually don't know. It was an avalanche of pain and humiliation. Dane Cook spoke to the Patriot Ledger. They were like, hey, Dane Cook, who did you look up to? Dane Cook said, there were incredible mentorships and friendships. I was a lucky son of a bee to have had my formative years in Boston. Joe Rogan was in the Boston Comedy graduating class before me, and he was still there for a minute before news radio. Then you had guys like Dennis Leary, not to mention the dozen or so local legends that have maybe never had a shot with TV, but were monsters of comedy, killing rooms, getting the kinds of laughs you only dream of. That's what we all came up under, all of us. Hey, Dane Cook, sometimes you've been criticized for your storytelling comedy style. Did you ever feel any pressure to change or become more conventional? Dane Cook said, when I watched Don Gavin or Steve Sweeney or even Kevin Knox, I didn't see the setup punchline. I saw them rambling and just rocking. You know, when I would see guys like George Carlin or watch an Eddie Murphy special, I wasn't focusing on the joke writers. I was focusing on the entities, the personalities, the larger-than-life people, because I knew a bit of whirling dervish, you know, antics, bombastic. So seeing somebody growing up like Steve Martin with the arrow going through his head and the white suit and the attitude, I was like, all right, this is where I'd like to exist. That's where I would live in it. So as I started gaining in popularity, I didn't really hear anybody. I knew there were people that were critical. There's always somebody yapping about you somewhere. That's life. That's the internet life. That's the comments section. Everybody's got something to say about what you should have done or should be doing. I just drown out the noise pretty quickly because I came up in that Boston era when it was noisy, and that noise was laughter and applause. And if you weren't hearing it, it wasn't robust, we wouldn't be talking today. It's like, what's that great quote? Whatever people think of me is none of my business. I also subscribe to some people brighten a room by leaving it. And fortunately or unfortunately, there's always somebody that just wants to be in the mix. And if they're not, they've got something to say about you. They're not going to nitpick. They're going to jeer. And there's no sweat because that all winds up to success. I'd rather have people chiming in than staying silent. I will jump in here. Man, when Dane Cook was white hot, audiences loved him. I was running SiriusXM Comedy at the time. Our audience loved Dane Cook. The other comedians did not like Dane. Now, one thing that would come up is that Dane was really popular on, I think it was MySpace back then, and they would like dig at him like, well, he's only popular because of MySpace. Hey, he was quicker to it than you were. Don't hate. The guy's selling out arenas. Also, back in the day, there was a kerfluffle between Dane Cook and Louis C.K. Dane was accused of joke theft. Vulture recapped this back in 2011. The accusation entered the general pop consciousness thanks to a 2007 article in Radar about joke stealing in general. Louis C.K. has never out and out said that he believes the material's plagiarized, and itchy butts, weird kids' names, and getting tongue-tied in a moment of panic aren't unique premises. Dane Cook addressed the accusations on his revealing and surprising moving June 2010 episode of Mark Maron's podcast, saying, I didn't steal anything from Louis C.K. How can I really convey to people so that they understand I've never stolen anything in my life? I'm not a thief. Louis backed off the issue, saying, I'm not sure he stole the material. I don't know that. I think it's possible he might have seen the bits and absorbed them and not known that he took them from me. I worry about that myself sometimes. It's hard to know where your thoughts come from, especially when you have a thirst for material because you need it professionally. Dane Cook appeared on Louis C.K.'s show Louis. In the episode, Louis C.K. writes, directs, and edits it. He wrote Dane Cook into the storyline as the means by which Louis C.K.'s character must acquire concert tickets for his daughter. The comic's comic transcribed the dialogue. Louis, I need to ask you a favor. Dane, this should be, it's really something. Okay. Look, I know that, what? I have a daughter. What can I do for you? I have a daughter. She just turned 10. She had a birthday. She wants to go see Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga, awesome. And I know you have the same promoter as her. Yeah. So I was hoping that you could help me to get her tickets for her birthday. I could totally do that for you. I know Lady Gaga. You do? And yeah, I could get you tickets backstage and I could help you make your daughter very happy. All you have to do is go on YouTube and tell everybody I did not steal your material. Louis, I never said you stole my material. Dane, you never said it, but you let other people say it. Louis, what let? I can't tell other people what to say. Dane, you're full of crap. Louis, Dane, look. You know what? I'm excited you're in this room right now because I've waited 4 years to tell you this. You know the year 2006? 2006? Yes, 2006. You don't really say 2006. It's 2006. 2006 is like saying the year 2000. And by the way, number six, Dane. 2006 was the greatest year of my entire life. I had a double platinum comedy album. First one to ever exist. I had a massive HBO special. I was on the cover of Time. Well, you're on the corner, the little corner thing. It's not like when the president's on the cover. 2006, that should have been my triumph, and I enjoyed it, Louis, for maybe 2 months. 2 months before it started to suck, because everything I read about me was how I stole jokes from you, which I didn't. Again, this is a scripted thing that Dane and Louis are doing here. Louis, I kind of think you did. Dane, dude, why would I steal 3 jokes from you when I have hours of material? Why? Why would I do that? Risk my reputation? Because they were funny jokes. You know what, Louis? You know what the biggest lie in the world is that I'm a rock star, I'm a millionaire, I'm a comedy behemoth, and you're like a comics comic, and you're an inside joke guy, and I'm a sellout, and I sold my soul, and you have artistic integrity, and you're a good guy. We're in this room right now, you and me. You're looking at me. You let your name be used to hurt me, and now you're sitting here asking me to use my fame to get you tickets to Lady Gaga? I mean, how crappy do you feel right now? Very. So you admit this is all BS? You want to know what I think? I don't think you saw me do those jokes and said I'm going to tell those jokes too. I don't think there's a world where you're that stupid or that bad a guy. I do think that you're like a machine of success. You're like a rocket. You're rocketing up to the stars and your engines are sucking up stuff. Stuff is getting sucked up in your engines like birds and bugs and some of my jokes. I think you saw me do them. I think you saw me do them. And I think they just went right to your brain. I don't think you meant to do it. I don't think you stopped yourself either. That's why I never felt the need to help you not be hated by a lot of people. But I feel bad. I mean, I do. I feel bad. This is incredible. Dane, that's great. I mean, that you feel bad right here in this room, just the two of us alone. Maybe if you felt bad publicly on the internet, then this could all be behind us. Well, are you willing to admit that even for a minute that maybe you inadvertently took them or some, or maybe you had some part of it, or maybe they got in your brain, you shat them out. Maybe it was inadvertent. Maybe it did happen. I shouldn't have come here. Louis, do you want the tickets? Because I'm sure that honestly, I think your daughter, I bet she's really nice, but you have a lot of nerve coming in here. I mean, I don't know what it's like. I don't have kids, so I don't get it, but it must mean a lot for you to come in here and do this. So you want the tickets? Thank you. Yes, I'd like to have the tickets. How many? 2, please. You got it. Thank you. I appreciate it a lot. Seriously. Comics Comic says Dane Cook told them back in 2007, I will say Louis C.K. I wrote Louis C.K. a letter. Louis C.K. wrote me a letter. I'm cool with Louis C.K. now. We hung out backstage at Comics Come Home, and I think we have a nice rapport. Do I think it sucks that I had to go through that rocky time and having people say that? Yeah, it was going to happen from somewhere, somehow. There's so much good happening to me. Somebody had to come and blast me from somewhere. I tell my family, get ready, because it's my turn to take some shots. But Louis C.K. is a great comic. And again, I've never spoken to this, but about those premises, some of those things that were things I've been doing for years. And certain people come to me and go, you were doing that in New York City, too, after that guy got hit by the car. What if he took it from you and put it on his CD? Never. Because I can look and say, if 10 comics watch a guy get hit by a car out here right now, 7 of them might go on stage that night and talk about the observational humor that they had it. How many people probably talked about it? It just happened that Louis and I had some parallel thinking. Can read all that I just did on the comics comic. Man, I didn't set out to do this. I've got so many leftovers. So let's meet back here tomorrow. Follow the show on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Would love your thoughts on all this on the Facebook group, Daily Comedy News Podcast group on your Facebook app. Wait, don't go. Are you still here? I forgot. I had other stuff I had to get to and I have to do today. Ricky Velez, everything debuts on HBO today. It is also Johnny Carson's birthday. The Elkhorn Valley Museum is putting a new twist on an old event. The museum will celebrate Johnny Carson's birthday with a night of comedy and magic. This year, we decided to switch up Johnny Carson's birthday celebration that we host every year. Usually, we just show the Johnny Goes Home special and we serve birthday cake. This year, we're bringing in local Nebraska magicians and comedians of all ages. They don't have to have any prior performance experience. It just has to be people who are interested in putting on a 5 to 8 minute set for the community. The museum lady says, I think it pays sort of a perfect homage to Johnny Carson, especially to his early career and his boyhood. His first paid gig was to the Norfolk Rotary Club at the age of 12, where he performed a magic show. We feel it's a very fitting way to memorialize Carson himself. This is tonight at the Elkhorn Valley Museum, Norfolk, Nebraska. And now we can leave. And I already said goodbye, so goodbye.